You're listening to Sportsnet Today
with Logan Gordon
on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Here comes William Stromgren all by himself into the Tucson zone. Stromgren splitting the D. Stromgren! Bottle slip! What a goal! William Stromgren! Two-goal lead! Oh, baby, that's for you, Bob Cole! What a finish!
Wranglers finish off the Tucson Roadrunners 2-0 in their opening round series of the Calder Cup playoffs. Now back home to the Scotiabank Saddledome for two matchups as part of their series against the Coachella Valley Firebirds. Welcome into Hour 2. Sportsnet Today live in the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studios. Logan Gordon along with you. Doug Lacey's Basement Systems, your local experts for basement waterproofing, sump pumps, crawl spaces, foundation repair, and radon mitigation. Visit TLBasementSystemsCalgary.com for more. All things NHL playoffs in Hour 1, including a chat with Justin Cuthbert from Sportsnet 590, The Fan and The Fan pregame show on Sportsnet. Talking about the downfall of the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're down 3-1 heading into Game 5 on Tuesday night. So if you missed any of that, check us out on the podcast. Google, Amazon, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher. We'd love to have you along for the ride. So to come in Hour 2, we'll talk about the Seattle Kraken and their decision to fire head coach Dave Hackstall. But before that, very happy to kick off the hour down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline with our next guest, usually busy with Calgary Hitmen tasks, but this past series for the Wranglers on color duties alongside Sandra Priscina. Cass Vilgrain joins us this afternoon. Thanks for the time today, Cass. How you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me. Just got back from Tucson.
How was Tucson?
It was exciting. It was great. I mean, not a bad place to play hockey, that's for sure.
Yeah, it seems like there's worse places to be at this time of the year. And you jumped on, you and Sandra and Olivia down there killing things for the Wranglers. How cool was it to be a part of the broadcast with Sandra?
Yeah, absolutely. It's my first time doing color commentating, so I'm glad they had some confidence in me to do that. And obviously working alongside Sandra Priscina, who's just an absolute pro and so good at what she does. She set me up really well, and it turned out to be a lot of fun and a good couple games to call for my first ones.
Have you always wanted to do that? Like, was this just a suggestion by Sandra or somebody, or were you always kind of wondering what it would be like to jump into the booth?
Not from day one. I mean, I think the great thing about Calgary Sports and Entertainment, once I started working for them, my role has really grown. I mean, the Calgary Hitmen, I do communications, but I also feel very close to the hockey ops side and go on the ice. And then this opportunity actually came up from my boss, Mike Moore, VP of the Calgary Wranglers, to have the opportunity to do this on the road since I was helping out with some social media anyway. So never really thought it on the horizon for me, but once I got into it, it's definitely something now that I have on my radar.
It's kind of a natural transition, I feel, for a lot of people with pro hockey experience and someone with as much experience as yourself. Obviously, we've got Megan Mickelson doing things on the Flame side of things, but did you feel a bit of a natural transition talking hockey in that spot, given all the history you have playing the game?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in different roles, you look at the game in a different capacity, and this, for me, was just watching the game of hockey and analyzing the play, and you realize how much you actually know and can pull from your own playing experience to kind of enhance the experience of a broadcast. So that was really cool to be able to exercise that kind of thing on the broadcast.
And a perfect series for the Calgary Wranglers to kick things off. They had the shutout from Dustin Wolf in game one and then a little bit of a tighter one in game two. But those three game sets so quick in the American Hockey League. What did you make of the Wranglers and their victory over Tucson?
You know what, you come in and you hear the word underdog a lot, and you're coming in as the seventh seed, and that can kind of affect the confidence of a team. But, you know, the Wranglers came into the weekend, landed in Tucson, high energy coming in, and they translated that right into the game and played with a lot of confidence. And obviously having the confidence of somebody like Wolf behind you as well, I thought they played some of their most well-managed games they have all season.
Who were some of the standouts for you in those two games in Tucson?
Well, obviously, we have to talk about Dustin Wolf a bit, but we will probably get to that, of course. But, you know, you have those guys that have that NHL experience with the Flames this year that have come back down and have proved that they deserve to be up there. You have guys like Klapka, who, you know, had the most points of the series with 3 points there, who just had his one NHL game and came back down and was playing with a lot of confidence all over the ice. And, you know, Soloviev getting that one goal in that second game was a critical piece, blocking shots, things like that. So I would say up front, Klapka, of course, and Soloviev. And then obviously, you heard the call at the beginning of the of the segment here, William Stromgren just coming into his own at the right time, and a huge goal for him, and I'm sure a huge confidence boost as well.
And for, you know, for William too, you know, a highlight reel play. He's 20 years old, his first year in Calgary. And I mean, you can kind of draw from that too. You went playing somewhere that you've never been before. And that's kind of a tough experience learning like that. And for William to score that kind of goal, it's got to be big for him. It's got to be big for his teammates too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you always obviously want to have a good start, but you're transitioning to a new place. You're coming into your own, and with an organization like ours, I think with the support that you have, especially in the Calgary Wranglers, I think, you know, you're given a lot of opportunity to make mistakes and to figure out who you are as a player. And I feel like he's doing, like I said before, that at the right time coming into playoffs.
As a hockey player, have you ever played in a 3-game series, like a 3-game playoff series or anything like that in your experience?
Yeah, the leagues that I played in university, the playoff series were definitely shorter. So that short term 3 games, kind of do or die games, are something that I'm more used to than the longer, extensive 5-game, 7-game series. So had a bit of experience having to play under pressure in a shorter series.
It sure feels like the first game of those short series winds up being so important.
Oh, absolutely. I think it sets the tone. I mean, you were up against a team like Tucson, who obviously was a really good hockey team. Even just look at the shot clock alone, they had a lot of guns up front, and to be able to just turn around, go into playoffs right away, and to be able to put on that kind of performance that the Wranglers did was quite impressive.
We mentioned Dustin Wolf, and we've got to talk about him. We talked about him so much this season, but for him, he comes up, has his longest stretch with the Flames to end the season, get some extended NHL playing time, and now back to the AHL, which is, you know, I can imagine can be difficult for him. He's talked about it all season, but he's handled it really well. He's kind of done a little bit of everything at the AHL level. He's been an MVP. He's been a 2-time goalie of the year, and now he's back here. He wants to set the stage, and pretty much no better way to do that, Cass, than a game one shutout and almost 50 saves in that game. It just feels like it was a good reminder of just how good Dustin Wolf can be when he's on his game.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's so level-headed, and just coming back down and playing with that kind of confidence and having that kind of performance. You talk about the accolades that he's had throughout the AHL. Well, that extended even further past the WHL as well. Like, he has been striving for this level of excellence since day one, and he's sustained it. And I think that's what Flames fans should be really excited about, is this consistency from this goaltender.
And it's got to give you a lot of confidence, too, playing in front of a guy like that, right? When you know your goaltender's on, and you know, not that you're ever looking to make a mistake, but you know, hey, if something happens, if a puck goes off my skate, if something happens, I should be okay because we've got that kind of solid wall behind us, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think the Wranglers did a really good job of keeping the Tucson Roadrunners to the outskirts and to the perimeter in game two. Game one, I think the stat was 31 of their chances were right in the house, and that's where Dustin Wolf comes in and making those huge saves there. And you can even just see the style of play that the Wranglers are playing, very aggressive. You see the D pinching down a lot, and I think that comes from the back end.
And interesting, you mentioned the D there for the Calgary Wranglers, probably the healthiest D core they've had all season because of call-ups and injuries, and now they've added a couple of guys from junior. Trent Call feels like he's got a lot more options than maybe he's had all season, and I wonder if the playoffs, now that the Flames season's done, if this isn't the strongest version we've seen of the Wranglers.
Yeah, absolutely. You know that Trent Call is looking up and down the bench, and he's looking at a lot more depth and a lot more guys that he can play in different situations, and that definitely comes from this D-Cor, and I think that this team has a lot of confidence in their D-Cor. You see a lot of the guys alluding to that as they talk about this last playoff series, is the D-Cor and obviously the goaltending. So it's been great.
I've noticed Matt Coronato, when I've watched Wranglers games this season, really find a different comfort level. I think he's still trying to transition that to the NHL level, finding that time and space to make him comfortable as a playmaker. But at the AHL level, I feel like he already has that comfort level, and I think it showed out a couple of times in those two games against Tucson. Did you see a lot of the same?
I absolutely did. You know, the confidence he has holding on to the puck, you know, choosing his moments, choosing his spots. I mean, you can see him grabbing the puck in the neutral zone, coming back, the last man back, and feeling completely comfortable and confident to make those plays under pressure like that. You can see the kind of confidence that he's had coming from the Flames, and to be able to implement it into the AHL and into these playoffs is so critical for the Wranglers right now for him to be playing at that kind of level.
And Flames fans will be interested to know, too, about Jacob Pelche. It was a tough year for him. Got hurt early on in the preseason, came back to the NHL. Clear he needed to get back to the American Hockey League level and play some, you know, some big minutes and some important minutes for this Wranglers team. And he didn't have a point in game two. But what did you see from Jacob Pelche?
Well, as Flames fans probably have gathered from watching him play, he brings so much energy to the game. And, you know, the line that he was playing on was exceptional in creating chances. It might have not shown up on the score sheet as much as they would have liked to, but they really set the tone in terms of pace. And that's really what he's brought to this team. And he seems like he's finding his top level right now. And that's exactly what you need going into the second round.
And how exciting is it? I know it's too bad. We would have loved to have had all three of our CSEC Flames teams in the postseason with the Hitmen and the Flames, but we've got playoff hockey coming this week at the Dome. I saw the graphic put up by the Wranglers earlier today. We have a new center ice logo. The W is in the middle of the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. How exciting is it that we're going to have some springtime playoff hockey in Calgary?
It actually is so exciting, and it's exciting to have all the eyes on this Wranglers team because, you know, last year going into it, number one seed, now being the seventh seed coming in, you know, there wasn't as much pressure on this team, but for them to overcome this first series, I think it creates a lot of hype for playoff hockey at the Dome, and I think it'll be a very exciting series here.
And next question, are you going to be back in the booth for some more games on this series or what?
I think definitely over on the road, I'll hop back in the booth with Sandra. I mean, now that I've gotten a little taste, it's going to be hard to stay away, so...
you know what? Really great job, Cass. It was great to see you and Sandra and listen to you guys. You guys did a tremendous job. It was great to see Olivia down there in Tucson. All three of you guys are killing it as always, and it was just awesome to have you guys do a great broadcast here on Sportsnet 960. So great job on that. I hope we get to hear you again during the series. Thanks for hopping on with me today.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Take care. Cass Fieldgrain joining us this afternoon down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. She was the color voice alongside Sandra Priscina for two games in Tucson here on Sportsnet 960. That saw the Wranglers down the Tucson Roadrunners in a best-of-three series. And yes, now back at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome for a couple of home games right here on Sportsnet 960. We get some playoff hockey, baby. I know it's not the Hitmen. I know it's not the Flames, and that's too bad. But this is the first time since coming to Calgary that we're going to get to, you know, or at least this season, I should say, getting to see more playoff hockey. It wasn't always a for sure thing for the Wranglers this year. Lots of injuries, lots of call-ups that, you know,
half their team went to the Flames.
Yeah.
It's hard to recover.
It was. And the first round series, man, the best of three. That's why I asked Cass about it. It just feels like it's such a momentum killer one way. It's like one game. All right, man, we didn't really have it. We couldn't get one past one. It's like we're already up for elimination. The margin is zero in a best-of-three series. And not that it's a lot bigger in a best-of-five as they head into a series against Coachella Valley, but it's a little bit more pressure off, and I feel like the Wranglers getting that first win against Tucson was so big. This is such a unique team because they've got, yes, lots of prospects from the Calgary Flames making an impact. Coronado, Wolf, Soloviev, you guys know all the names that are doing that. But they also got these veterans in Sutter and McLean who are leading the way. You know, Mark Pisick is down there as a defenseman with lots of NHL experience. These guys have lots to play for, and it's for Dustin Wolf. It's like the one thing that's eluded him in the AHL is a championship, and it's a team thing. It's not just on Dustin, but it would be so cool to see them go on a long playoff run. I asked Ryan Husk about this following the Flames' last game about how important it's going to be for these guys. He's a former coach, obviously, of this team back in Stockton, and he said these are the most valuable games you can get outside of NHL experience. These are the games that are going to help these guys develop, and for them to be into the second round, it's a very good Coachella Valley team. There's no doubt about it's going to be a tough series, but they just downed the number two team. And I've kind of felt this way the whole time, Shan. I kind of feel like they're not your traditional seven seed.
Not even
like
close.
If everyone was healthy
and
there all year, there's no chance this team finishes seventh in the division.
This is one of the best teams in the AHL, period, when they have all these guys. I don't think you can argue against that. They proved that last year, and all of them were a year younger. So, yeah, and you're right. Perfect mix of veterans and young guys. And, I mean, the young guys are studs. Like, Pelletier, we know what he can do at the NHL level, and he's been great at the AHL level for a few years. Dustin Wolf, like you mentioned. It's crazy to think that the only thing that's eluded him is a championship.
That's it.
That's it.
Goalie of the year twice, MVP. Like, what else are you supposed to?
There's nothing else.
There's nothing else for you to accomplish. Like, a goalie goal? That's it?
Yeah.
That's literally all we have. But yeah, we're excited to have playoff hockey back in Calgary. We're excited to be able to bring you the games here on Sportsnet 960. And as the, I'm not even afraid to say this, the weird AHL schedule continues, the Wranglers actually kicked this series off at home despite being the lower seed, which is weird, but that's how it works.
I know. I've thought about it. I don't know if I like it.
Yeah, it's just kind of weird. I can't explain to you the thinking behind it. I didn't get the three-game series.
I don't even want to call that a series. I can call five games a series. Three games, that's not enough.
It's tough. And now we're into a best of five here in round two that kicks off on Friday. Friday, May 3rd, 7 p.m., Scotiabank Saddle Dome. And then Sunday, May 5th, 4 o'clock at the Dome. Game one and two for the Wranglers. Tickets on sale right now, calgarywranglers.com/playoffs. Super affordable. It's a great atmosphere. You're not going to find cheaper playoff tickets in this city to go see these guys. And a lot of them you're going to see on the Flames the next couple of years anyways. And the tickets are going to cost you a hell of a lot more to go do that. You have no excuse. I want to see the Dome rammed on Friday and on Sunday. Wranglers, CalgaryWranglers.com/playoffs. Game one is on Friday, 7 p.m. That's a perfect Friday night. Sunday, 4 o'clock Mountain, right here on Sportsnet 960. We're going to bring you all the games on this broadcast. Games 3, 4, and 5. 4 and 5, are, of course, if necessary, will be in Coachella Valley. And we'll bring you all those games with Sandra Priscina on the call right here. You can also, of course, catch all the action on AHL TV, but why not be in the building on Friday and on
who doesn't
Sunday.
Love a trip to the Dome? Like, really?
Cam.
Yeah, of course. Well, Cam's on the Coachella Valley Firebirds.
Yeah, that's true.
I was doing some research. He's third. Cam, you were third on the team this year. How do you feel about that?
That's pretty good, considering I was here for most of the time. So I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's impressive. I mean, 57 points in 69 games is not bad.
Nice.
I'm just looking at tickets now.
25 goals.
On the old Ticky Master.
You had a lot of penalty minutes, though.
Yeah, I got to work on
typical.
That.
Typical.
Yeah.
Bruiser.
56.
Cam's like a bully on the ice.
and off the ice.
Like how both of you are on that. Look, some good tickets still available, but they're going fast. Friday's game looks like we're going to have a really good crowd. Sunday still selling quick. Like, I mean, Ticketmaster, go pick up tickets. $45.
Playoff hockey.
Dustin Wolf, Klapka, Sutter, Moore. Slowly, give me more names.
Pelche.
Morton.
Wolf.
Yeah, oh, I said Wolf already.
Stromgren.
All of them.
Trent Cole.
Yeah, if you want to go watch Trent Cole, you can do that.
He fires me up. He gives me the, I'd run through a wall for this guy.
I feel like he does a nasty pregame
speech. Oh, for sure.
You know Trent Cole fires the boys.
Oh, 100%. Says a couple words that he needs to and just gets the team ready to go.
Big intermission guy, I feel like, too. Get the boys going in the right direction.
I feel like he's one of those coaches that he could stare at you for an entire intermission and be like, that's enough. All right, we're good. We needed that.
I feel like you know when he's watching you on the bench, too.
Oh, yeah.
You're sitting there.
You can feel it.
I know it's a bad shift.
My neck is burning.
I got Trent on my back here. I got to go out and have a good shift.
Yeah.
CalgaryWranglers.com/playoffs. Get your tickets for Friday and Sunday. Again, both games here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan. Thanks again to Cass Vilgrain for joining us. We'll have more coverage on the Wranglers as we get set for their matchup on Friday throughout the week here on Sportsnet Today. Take a break. Come back on the other side. Seattle Kraken have fired their head coach.
Bye.
Surprising many. What's next for Seattle? We'll talk about that next. But first, here's Shan Verju with the latest on the Toronto Blue Jays.
Time now for the Jays Report on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Shan Verju.
Shohei Ohtani and the Los Angeles Dodgers rolled into Toronto on Friday for a three-game series and had their way with the Jays. Game one on Friday night was as ugly as could be. We all knew it was coming, we all knew it would hurt, but he didn't have to do it in his first at-bat.
Last year when Ohtani was here with the Angels, cheers went out all around the ballpark when he stepped up, but a very different place now in the minds of Blue Jay fans. 1-1. Swing and a high fly ball. Deep right field. Springer at the wall. He's run out of room. That ball is gone. Starts the series just like he did last year. A home run in his first at-bat. It's 1-0 Dodgers.
He heard the boos from the crowd of just under 40,000 and sent one to the right field bullpen to open the scoring. Chris Bassitt got the start and was shaky from the get-go, but it all blew up in the third. Mookie Betts and Ohtani got on base for Freddie Freeman, who hit an RBI single, and then Will Smith, the catcher, not the guy who slapped Chris Rock, hit another one to make it 3-0. Then Max Muncy to the plate with two men on, and he makes no mistake for a 6-0 lead. That was the end of the night for Chris Bassitt, who finished with less than three innings pitched, nine hits, seven earned runs, and three batters walked. And there's really no point breaking down the rest of the game here because the Dodgers continued to beat up the Jays and came away with a 12-2 win in Game 1. But good news, everyone, Game 2 wasn't as brutal as Game 1, and that's about as nicely as I can put it. Yusei Kikuchi on the hill to face the dangerous Dodgers offense and try and help the Blue Jays bounce back. Freeman brought Betts home in the first to open the scoring, and in the second, Chris Taylor brought home a runner with a single. Ohtani did the same with a 119.2-mile-per-hour single to right field for a 4-0 lead. If you're thinking he hit that really hard, that's because he did. It's only the hardest hit baseball all season. Davis Schneider would bring home a runner in the seventh, as well as Kevin Biggio in the ninth, but that would be all. The Jays lose 4-2 to the Dodgers, and all they could do is avoid a sweep with a win in Game 3. Sunday's game was a great game to get Kevin Gausman back on track. He was 0-3 on the season, looking to snap a five-game skid for Toronto. The good news is he was great, and the bats somewhat backed him up. Bottom of the second, the Jays put some pressure on Michael Grove and broke through with an RBI from Dalton Varsho and another from Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. With the bases cleared and two outs, Alejandro Kirk for the first time this season.
3-1 is hit well, right field. Chasing Páez back, he turns. It's gone! First home run of the season for Alejandro Kirk, and the Blue Jays lead 3-0.
3-0 lead for the Jays held until Freeman hit a 425-foot bomb in the sixth, but in the ninth, George Springer put on a defensive clinic.
Romano's pitch. Hit to right field. On the run, Springer racing back, dives, and makes the catch! A scream from the seat of his pants by Springer. Highlight reel in right. One out.
That was the best catch I've ever seen George Springer make. That was incredible. A potential game-saving catch.
The Jays finish with a 3-1 win as they avoid the sweep and move to 14-15 on the season. The Blue Jays are right back at it tonight with a three-game set against the Kansas City Royals, who they just lost 3-4 against last week. Jonathan Bolin versus Yariel Rodriguez will be your pitching matchup with first pitch at 5:07 tonight on the 960 airwaves. Enjoy the game tonight. I'm Shan Verji, and that was your Jays Report.
Catch the Blue Jays all season long right here on Calgary's home of the Blue Jays. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, closing out the show on this Monday. Chatted lots of hockey. Playoffs continue Monday night. Two games. Panthers look to get rid of the Tampa Bay Lightning in game five of that series. 5 o'clock Mountain start on Sportsnet. Vegas, Dallas. 7:30 start right here on Sportsnet 960. And, of course, on the Sportsnet television network. Dallas looking to tie that series up at two games apiece. And more off-the-ice coaching news. Kind of been doing this as the Stanley Cup playoffs have continued. We talked about the Sharks and their decision to move on from David Quinn last week. Now the Seattle Kraken have announced on this Monday Dave Hackstall out after 3 years coaching the Seattle Kraken. It was, of course, their first coach in team history. Finalist for the Jack Adams Award as Coach of the Year last season. Seattle finished with 100 points. They reached the Western Conference semifinals in just their second year, but they failed to match those expectations this season, trying to climb back into playoff contention after a rough start. They finished tied for fifth in the Pacific, going 34, 35, and 13, finishing with 81 points. They were officially eliminated from playoff contention with about 2 weeks left in the regular season, and Hakstol finishes his Seattle tenure with a record of 107, 112, and 27. GM Ron Francis said to reporters last week they were going to do a analysis and a review of the coaching staff, which is never good.
No. Can I give analysis and a review on this team?
Sure.
The entire team, except for Jared McCann, is third liners.
I don't know if that's true of Matty Beniers.
Okay, Beniers, pardon me. Beniers and McCann are the exceptions. And Gore's a really good player, but remember, he was best as a third liner. Like, Eberle, you can call a second liner, sure. I mean, this team is not amazing. And the fact that he brought him to the playoffs last year and they won a series, I don't know. It seems like another pretty harsh firing. But, you know, we talked about it earlier with Justin Cuthbert. Is look at what Vegas done. They saw a better option, so they just fired their coach. They had Pete DeBoer. They had Gallant and saw a better option, said, all right, and clearly worked for them because they won the Stanley Cup. So it's interesting. It's just we're seeing some harsh coaching firings lately.
I don't know if this is a harsh one for me because the more I look at it, the more I think I don't think they regressed this year necessarily from what they were in year two. I think they, like, I don't think that it was like, oh, this is a team that should be making the playoffs consistently, and they fell back from that. In my mind, I look at Seattle and I say, last year was the outlier. Like, last year was the exception, and this year they went back to just being what they were. So if you take away the year that was the outlier, and I know that that's not necessarily fair in hindsight, but if you think of Seattle as the same average team they've sort of been since they came into the league, and they didn't have 1 year way above expectations, then Dave Hakstol's been coaching an average team and managed to get 1 year out of it. I think this year was more of an indication of what this team is, and that's partly on the coach. It's also partly on Ron Francis, who has built this team to be that. I agree with you in the sense that I don't think Dave Hakstol had a lot to play with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know how many other coaches are. Like, if this roster is not a lot different next year, I don't know how different the result is. But I don't think Dave Hakstol was the guy that was going to push them to being a playoff team when they're not one.
Yeah.
Like, year after year. Like, that's just not, I don't think that was going to happen last year.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun. And they had some great seasons, but it was never, I didn't think that that was the beginning of Seattle consistently running to the playoffs. This team still has massive holes. I still don't like the goaltending. Grubauer, Decord, and Driedger, I don't think gets it done.
Yeah.
I don't think you have a number one goalie there. I really like Vince Dunn. He's been a stud there.
Yeah, he's great.
Will Borgen's been a nice pickup from the expansion draft. But, I mean, past that, it's just a lot of guys that are, you know, middle pairing to third pairing guys. You mentioned it. I disagree. I thought McCann. And maybe Andre Burakovsky could fit when he's healthy, closer to a top nine guy.
Tolvanen as well.
Yeah, but for the most part, this team isn't built right now as a contender.
And just as we talk, it's making me wonder if the huge regression that Matty Beniers had, if that's part of it. If they saw, because, you know, he was the Calder winner. Like, he, you know, 57 points in 80 games. It's not jump off the page kind of stuff, but the fact that he had 37 points in 77 games this year, that's very concerning. I mean, he was their pick. He was their first guy.
Yeah, and I remember chatting with a couple of people from Seattle this season about Matty Beniers, and I think a lot of it's been too, the league figures you out.
Yeah.
Right? It's the same as a lot of rookie quarterbacks in the NFL, right? You have a great year. But year two is going to be a lot harder for CJ Stroud than it was in year one.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as they get tape on you, they start to figure out what you're doing in the faceoff dot. They start to figure out what style of play really bugs you. You know, is someone following you in man-to-man coverage? Is someone playing you a little more physically? Whatever it is, they're going to figure that out. Yeah. And like you mentioned, not a lot of guys to circle on Seattle when it comes around. Beniers is going to be one of those guys.
Yeah.
So it's going to be on him to adjust and get back to that level. It's also going to be on Seattle to build around him, right? Shane Wright is going to have to come up to this team next year, I think, and be a pretty consistent threat. They're going to pick right now ahead of the Flames, right there in that eighth spot pre-draft lottery. They're going to have to make a significant addition with that pick.
That's they could use a guy like maybe TJ Ginla.
That's not a bad idea. You made a lot of people in Calgary mad, but it's not I don't disagree with you on that. Right? They've got a second round pick from the Rangers, including their own.
Yeah.
They're a third rounder from the Leafs. They've got picks. This team needs some, and it was what Vegas went out and aggressively pursued. Right out of the draft, Vegas looked a lot like this too. But minus the major scoring threats. Because there just wasn't any in the expansion draft. There were good players. And they're definitely pieces to build around.
Yeah.
But Seattle didn't have the advantage that Vegas did of making all of those pre-draft trades and everything else because nobody wanted to go down that road again. And B, I don't know the Vegas model is necessarily, I don't know if you can replicate it if you're Seattle, but I wouldn't vote against it if I was them. Like if I was Ron Francis in the hockey ops department looking at what we need, high-end talent's kind of near the top of that list.
Yeah.
If it means giving up Shane Wright or giving up your first this year to go out and get a difference maker, kind of like the Vegas Golden Knights did when they were early on and they went out and they made every deal.
Mm-hmm.
They had Stone and Eichel, they signed Petrangelo. Like they did a lot. I think it wouldn't hurt Seattle to go down a similar path the more that I look at it.
Yeah, and they absolutely have pieces to work with. Like, I joked about this team being full of third liners. These are not ineffective guys. These guys can produce and provide, and they do. You just, getting that top-end talent's really hard to do, and it's easier.
Yeah, 62 points isn't going to...
No.
For your leading scorer isn't going to get you...
No.
To the Stanley Cup.
But it's a lot easier to bring top-end talent to Vegas than it is Seattle. I'm not saying anything about Seattle as a city. It's just Vegas is Vegas. And it's one of the prime destinations. There's a reason that every single franchise is moving there. It helps. Like Vegas is running exactly how a Vegas team should run. We have the chance to win every year. It's similar to look at the Lakers. Lakers could get whoever they want. Vegas can somewhat do the same with cap restraints, which is different, but.
As for options out there, some veteran options perhaps that Seattle looks at. Todd McClellan's available. Obviously, Craig Berube is a name that has floated around a lot of different places. Of course, I think you probably have to put Toronto in the mix for a new head coach as well. And you got to wonder what their interest is after Sheldon Keefe to go back to a veteran head coach in that market.
I wonder about Woodcroft. I really do wonder if he makes his way back to the NHL soon because I think there's a few openings. Like he's already dealt with Connor McDavid, best player in the world. So
yeah, but that'll hurt him some places, though.
Yeah, that's true. No, but
that's the problem, yeah. Right? Is some people will say it's easy to coach Connor McDavid. You just let him be Connor McDavid, right? So maybe you didn't have to do all that much. It has this look. The Oilers got off to a really bad start. Would they have rebounded to the same extent if Woodcroft stayed there? Maybe. I don't know how much of it was Woodcroft induced and how much of it was just like, hey, we need to shake the cobwebs out of everybody and realize the hole that we're in.
Yeah.
So we're going to make a really drastic move. I just don't. I don't know how much of a difference there is between Jay Woodcroft and Chris Knoblaw. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, fair enough.
So I think, I can't see San Jose being in the mix for a big-time veteran head coach. I could see them going younger and more developmental given where they're going. But I think Seattle, given what Ron Francis has said, given the kind of roster they have, big name veteran coach, kind of, I don't know, like Todd McClellan would make a lot of sense. I think that's one that I immediately look
at. Well, he's been around the league and he's also coached some really good teams. Like some good teams, some good players. And he's been around the league for a long time for a reason.
I want to update you with some injury news around the Stanley Cup playoffs on this Monday. Of course, we've mentioned no Austin Matthews at practice for the Leafs. Toronto is in panic mode. as they're getting set to return to Boston for game five of that series, down 3-1. Brendan Dillon, obviously, dealing with that cut, but they're hopeful he can play game five as they're facing elimination in Winnipeg. No damage is what we've heard, but lots of stitches holding everything together.
It's a miracle there's no damage on there. That was gruesome.
It's stunning to me that doesn't happen more. You know what I mean? Like, as I was watching that pile, because I didn't think anything of it until I think David Amber and a few other people tweeted out Brendan Dillon got cut in that scrum, because they didn't show him at first going off. And I said, just a big scrum to end the game. That kind of happens. As I was watching that pile, and I'm just after I saw Dillon got cut, I'm like, how does that not happen more?
Yeah.
Like, guys are stepping around you. There's just bodies flying everywhere. And I don't think anybody is really even thinking about where their feet are going. Refs are stepping over guys to try to get in between guys. Your gloves are off, right? The first thing you do when you get in a scrum like that, most guys are taking their gloves off, trying to punch somebody else in the face. I'm very thankful that it wasn't worse for Brendan Dillon, but I also watched that and went, wow, would that make me think twice getting in a pileup like that because of how many skates? And I mean, you couldn't even see how it happened. That was frightening. But yeah, they said no damage at all, which is really good, but a lot of stitches. They were hesitant to put him back right away. He wants to play and just tape it up, but...
that's expected of Brendan Dillon.
Right around your hand and your wrist. Seems like a pretty easy area to reopen a pretty massive cut like that. So you got to do what's best for Brendan Dillon. He, of course, missed game four in that loss to the Colorado Avalanche. Matt Martin not going to play in game five for the Islanders as they take on the Carolina Hurricanes. He's got a lower body injury. That per, of course, head coach Patrick Waugh. Simon Holmstrom skated in his spot at practice, and we'll see what they go with in an elimination game against Carolina on Tuesday. And Derek Forbort will be, quote, an option for the Boston Bruins in game five of their matchup with the Toronto Maple Leafs, the one-time Calgary Flame.
I liked him.
I did actually like him in his time in Calgary.
He's one of those guys you don't want to hear about.
No, he's just a solid, I think, a third-pairing guy. He had surgery and played two games with Providence of the AHL on a conditioning stint in April, and was on the third pairing with Parker Wotherspoon on Monday. So good news. They expected Forbort to be out for the season, but he could be an option to go. And of course, Brad Marchand, Danton Heinen off for maintenance reasons at this point in the playoffs. So trying to keep everybody healthy and together. That's the latest on the injury news in the NHL. And we have our first award finalists. NHL are going to be releasing these over the next couple of days, but we can tell you Sergei Bobrovsky, Thatcher Demko, and Connor Hellebuck are your finalists for the Vezina Trophy this year, voted on by the NHL GMs. Bobrovsky, 36-17-4 record, 237 goals against, .915 save percentage, tied for the league lead in shutouts with 6 this season in 58 games for the Florida Panthers. That's pretty impressive. Helped them win the Atlantic Division. Bobrovsky is a 3-time finalist, and he's won it twice. Won it with the Jackets in 2012-2013 and in 2016-2017.
It was ridiculous watching him on the Blue Jackets because, like, that's the definition of carrying a team on your back.
Also, Thatcher Demko of the Vancouver Canucks, currently injured, but, of course, an outstanding season for him. 35-14-2, 245 goals against, .918 save percentage. He had 5 shutouts in 51 games, finished tied for 6th in wins, and was leading the NHL in wins when he sustained that knee injury on March 9th that caused him to miss 14 games. And last but not least, it seems like everyone's favorite for this award, Connor Hellebuck, 37-19-4, 239 goals against, .921 save percentage, 5 shutouts in 60 games. 2nd in wins, save percentage, 4th in goals against, made the 2nd most saves this season behind only UC Saros, and was, of course, the William M. Jennings Trophy winner as the goalie who presented annually to a minimum of 25 games, allowing the fewest goals during the regular season. Hellebuyck is a four-time finalist, and he won the Vezina in 2019-2020. So big ups there. I think who you vote, it would be Hellebuyck.
Oh, 100%.
Right?
First of all, I don't understand the Jennings Trophy.
What don't you get?
Like, you've already got the Vezina. I feel like the Jennings is kind of
it's like the Art Ross and the Rocket Richard, except for goalies. And it's a weird one because it's kind of a team stat rather than a goalie, right? It's it's a pairing thing, right? It's your tandem released or let in the least amount of goals this season. I think there could be an award for, like, if you want to do the minimum 25 games played for who had the highest save percentage and the best goals against average, I think maybe you could do that. But yeah, the Jennings does kind of get swept under the rug because the Vezina is what everyone wants to win. You can win the Jennings and not win the Vezina.
Yeah, okay. No, right? That's a good point.
So we'll see. More award winners and finalists announced as the NHL playoffs continue, but Bobrovsky, Demko, and Hellebuyck are your Vezina Trophy finalists for 2024. Good thing they don't vote it on the playoffs, because I think Hellebuyck...
He would have lost a couple votes.
I think he'd lose a couple votes.
He doesn't even look like himself.
I guess Colorado does that to teams.
For sure, but this bad with the Vezina winning goaltender, that's...
It was supposed to be the big advantage.
Yeah.
In that series, and it hasn't been. Before we go, do the Florida Panthers close it out tonight against Tampa Bay, yes or no?
Yes. They're the best team in Florida. It's very apparent. They're one of the best teams in the States, period.
Do the Stars tie it up with the Golden Knights?
Yes.
I really want that to happen because I think this is just two juggernauts. I don't want that series to end anytime soon. Stars Golden Knights has been so much fun. It's on your radios tonight. It's a 7:30 start. Lightning and Panthers get going at 5:00. We'll bring you the Stars and the Golden Knights following the Kansas City Royals and the Toronto Blue Jays. That'll be on your radios later tonight. You can also watch it on Sportsnet 1. Sportsnet, of course, television networks got you covered for both the Lightning and the Panthers and the Stars and the Golden Knights. Thank you to Cass Vilgrain and Justin Cuthbert for joining us on the program today. Thanks to Shan and Cam, my outstanding producers, for their great work as well. And thank you for listening with us live or on the podcast. Really do appreciate it. Again, if you missed anything, you can check us out wherever you get your favorite podcast. Hour one, lots of NHL playoff talk with Justin Cuthbert. We dove into the Leafs and the Bruins. Wranglers talk to kick off hour two with Cass Vilgrain. They're set for home games Friday and Sunday this week at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. CalgaryWranglers.com/playoffs. If you want to get tickets to one of those games, we'll have them both on your radios right here on Sportsnet 960 with Sandra Priscina on the call, so you don't want to miss it. We're available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Just search Sportsnet Today 960. Have yourselves a great Monday. Enjoy whatever it is you're watching, whether it's the NHL playoffs, you're going to watch some basketball. What are you watching basketball, Shan? You love basketball. What's going on?
It's been fun. The Milwaukee Bucks are a bit of a mess. They don't have Giannis. The Phoenix Suns, I've said it before the year started, they got Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, Devin Booker. Problem is they only play with one basketball. So that was a disaster. They got swept by Anthony Edwards, who acts like a child. He's awesome. He goes out, drops 35, 40 points on you, and then just like skips away and does all these little dance. I love Anthony Edwards. But anyways, NBA's been fun. Definitely NHL playoffs are what I'm focused on. But anyways.
That's as much basketball as we'll talk this week.
Probably. Yeah, I think that's probably enough. I don't think anyone wants to hear anymore.
Whatever you're watching on this Monday night, enjoy it. We'll check in with you on another edition of Sportsnet Today on Tuesday, right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.